I'm delighted to welcome to This Irish American Life Tom Phelan, author of, most recently, and the subject of our chat today, We Were Rich and We Didn't Know It, a memoir of my Irish boyhood. First of all, Tom, welcome to the show and thank you for taking time to chat to us here today on This Irish American Life.
It's my pleasure, Miriam.
Delighted to have a chat to have an opportunity to chat to you. And I should mention, I had the pleasure of interviewing Tom in the form of an oral history. Oh, gosh, it's probably close to 10 years ago. And you said that you had a memoir on the horizon. So it's really delightful to see that come to fruition. It's about your childhood or growing up in Ireland in the 1940s. Tom, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and the origins of the book?
Well, the book stops at when I'm 14 and when I go away to boarding school. And when I started to write the memoir, what I was really doing, I was trying to figure out why I ever became a Catholic priest. What were the social and the familial and religious forces that sort of led me into the Catholic priesthood. And as I was writing that, my father began to play a large part in the book, in the memoir. And the two themes, my relationship with my father and the ways in which I was really unknowingly on my part led towards the priesthood, the two themes merged, and eventually it was my father who became the story of my father and me was the dominant theme, and he became so dominant that in fact at one time the memoir was titled Working for John Joe. John Joe was my father. I had the name of my father, and that's his name in the book. I was born in the Midlands of Ireland in a farm of 50 acres, which was very poor land because it was very soft and it held water. And when it rained, it remained wet and soggy until the weather got better. And even when the weather did get better, it took an extra few days for the water to drain away. And the title of the book, We Were Rich. We were rich in the sense of, in comparison to an awful lot of people around us. We lived outside the town a half a mile. We were never hungry. We went to school, walked to school every day, where we mingled with town children. And many of the children in the town, we call them the townies, their fathers were laboring men, usually working for a farmer. And if the weather was bad, there was no work. And it wasn't until much later that I realized that quite a few of the children I went to school with were poor, and that some of them came to school with no breakfast, and they certainly didn't bring lunch with them. I personally thought that the town children were rich because somehow a lot of them were able to scrape together the 4 pennies to go to the movies at least once a week. And we were not allowed to go to the movies because we were told we didn't have the money to spend on movies. And another thing was, I personally thought that the town children had a much easier life than we had. Now, on the way home from school, they rambled home, played ball on the way, went home, went out to play with the other children. Whereas we, following the very strict instructions of my father, we went straight home and changed our clothes into work clothes and did the chores that were ours to do in the farmyard and in the fields. I used to think that the town children were much better off than we were. However, as when I grew older, there was one little thing that used to happen. Didn't happen too much, but it did happen a few times. Taught me, that made me realize that some of the children I went to school with were very, very poor. And when we went to school, we brought a sandwich with us. It was usually two slices of bread with butter and maybe sugar sprinkled on it. And we didn't have a dining room or anything. We went outside and we lay up against the wall and ate our sandwich. And sometimes when doing this, a town child boy would run by and grab the sandwich out of my hands and run away, and while doing so would stuff it into his mouth. And I always thought that they were just bullies. But they weren't bullies, they were hungry children. And I wasn't their target, my sandwich was their target. So that's how I came to call the book We Were Rich and We Didn't Know It.
So, I assume, I haven't had the pleasure of, the book is on my bookstand to read, Tom. I assume that you mentioned early on, or it's implicit, that you eventually leave the priesthood. Can I ask you why this preoccupation about how you ended up in the priesthood at this time of your life? I mean, is that something that has kind of gnawed at you in terms of how it had happened or whatever? Can you talk to me a little bit about that kind of wish to excavate that part of your kind of your life, that early part of your life, in terms of the lead up to you eventually becoming a priest?
Yes, a few people have asked me, am I going to write a sequel to this, going on into the priesthood? But I'm not going to do that. And the reason why I'm not going to do this, because my experience within the priesthood was very painful. I was very unfortunate in the two pastors that I was assigned to in England. When I think of the priesthood, it's all a negative thing in my head. It took me quite a while to sort of re-establish myself. When I left the priesthood, I felt that I had been beaten down and that I need to recover myself. And I guess in some ways, even after all these years, I'm still doing that. And actually, you know the thing about giving people free rent in your head. Well, there's a few people who still have free rent in my head. And the thoughts I have them are not very pleasant. And actually, I have decided I'm not going to write about the priesthood because it's too negative, too painful for me to do that. And I think if I had had human beings as my first two pastors, that I would not have left the priesthood, but I just got off on the wrong foot with the whole thing.
With all that in mind, Tom, would you say that the act of writing the memoir, and you know what, I recall us, you know, when you sat down and allowed me interview you, I recall you talking about these matters as well. Is there a kind of cathartic feeling in terms of, you know, either the act of writing or now that it's published and kind of out in a wider world? Do you feel better after doing it in this way?
I don't think I do. But I did. I wrote a novel and had it published. It was called Iscariot. And in Iscariot, it is very loosely based. It's set up as a a relationship between a priest who left and a priest who stayed in. And the Iscariot in the book is not the one who left. The Iscariot is the one who stayed in. And that book contains a lot of some of the experiences, anyhow, that I had in the priesthood. And I don't know what else to say. I don't think I felt freed after writing that book. I don't think I felt freed after writing this one.
Tom, you know, given the, you know, scale of migration out of Ireland in around the decades that you grow up and everything, it strikes me, you know, for anyone interested in the social history or cultural history of Ireland in, frankly, it could be any part of Ireland, right? You're profiling, of course, you know, where you grew up in County Leash and whatever. But am I correct in thinking that there hasn't been a whole pile written about the kind of intricacies of life in that period and the way you kind of delve into it? Or am I incorrect in that, would you say? I mean, in other words, were there a lot of other models of people writing memoirs, you know, memoirs about Irish childhoods around the same period as yourself?
Well, John McGurn, I forget the name of his memoir.
That's right, actually, you're right. His one, yeah, I know the one you're talking about, and I don't recall it either, yeah.
He was very, influenced me quite a bit in writing this one. In his book, when he goes into great detail about the trip to school with his mother holding his hand, and he's in the journey to school, he comments on the things that he passes every day, the people that he passed and met every day, the flowers in the hedges, all that kind of stuff. And actually, I use that as a model for us children. There were five of us, and we walked to school most days except when it was pouring rain. And as we went to school, as I went on that journey to school in the book, I wouldn't say I copied John McGurn, but I took the idea from him of bringing in instances in my childhood that were very important to me, of places where stuff happened. For instance, there was one place we were sort of afraid to pass by because a man had broken the windows, the big plate glass windows, in a bar because he became very emotionally upset, and he ended his days actually in a hospital, and he was brought away in a straitjacket. And when this all happened, we were young. You know, it's the first time we heard what a straitjacket was, what it did to a person, and how difficult it was to control the person. Like, that little incident in my childhood was a very, very big incident, and every time we passed that place, we were sort of a little bit nervous. There was another house where we passed where a First World War man, who was shell-shocked every now and then, used to scream, and we would always go past his house on the other side of the road. So these little things, a whole lot of little things, as John McGurn did in his, I did the same thing in We Were Rich. And also, I would say I was influenced by James Joyce's sermon in Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, the sermon given during a retreat. And I took that as a sort of a model for the sermon that our parish priest gave every year on the anniversary of Oliver Plunkett, the parish priest, was a rabid, bitter, anti-English, anti-Protestant man, and he just laid it into the British on the Sunday nearest the feast of Oliver Plunkett. So I couldn't tell you too much about Joyce's sermon, except that there was a lot about hell in it, and in the sermon I gave this priest, his drew a lot about his hatred of the English.
Tom, the premise of the book in terms of, you know, in a way you being, like, I suppose the word you could use is groomed for the priesthood. Of course, I'm correct in observing, right, that was not uncommon, right, in Ireland for many decades, over many generations, that one son or perhaps a daughter in terms of going off to become a nun would kind of be identified and kind of exposed in certain ways to the church, or kind of, you know, held up as being maybe more pious than the others and things like that, on that kind of pathway to them, you know, hopefully eventually, you know, entering the church. Is that a fair description?
Yes. There's a chapter in the book called The Jubilee Nurse. The Jubilee Nurse delivered me when at home, like she delivered all my siblings. And when she smacked my bottom, it was said that she said that I cried so loud that my voice would fill a church someday. And in the book I say these were the first words spoken ex utero about me. And during my childhood, people often referred to me as I would make a lovely priest. Actually, the first day in school, I was taught first for until the age of seven by the nuns. Three nuns told me on the first day in school that I would make a lovely priest. There was that kind of thing. Was that subtle or not? I don't know if it was subtle or not, but in many ways, many people would bring this up to me, you know, oh, you're going to be a priest. And, you know, somebody said, we become what other people want us to become. Oh, unfortunately, I went into the priesthood. And it was accepted, very much accepted, that I had a brother, a priest, I had a sister, a nun. It was very much accepted that there was a specialness, a sort of a heroism about giving your life over to the church. And it's something that does not exist anymore. Actually, when I was in
it. It reflected well on the family as well by extension, Tom, right? You know, not only that, you know, there were kind of practical things in terms of, you know, the stability of, you know, being in within the kind of rubric of the church and being looked after in terms of your kind of material needs. But what am I correct in thinking as well that there was, you know, there was a cachet in terms of for the family to have a member of the, you know, someone in the priesthood? My gosh, for your family to have had two priests and a nun was, I mean, I know that wasn't the most unusual thing, presumably, in that period, but that was something to be kind of proud of in terms of a family's status.
Oh, yes, of course. I often think that the rite of ordination boosted people, I'm talking here about priests, not nuns, boosted people through several, many layers, social layers. And suddenly from having been brought up in a regular household where there wasn't much extra to be had, where you never met the big people in the local society, you were suddenly boosted up through same level as the doctor, the bank manager, sergeant, probably higher than the sergeant. Anyhow, and the nuns, certainly, I was reading not so long ago about in this country, the people who became nuns were the best and the brightest. And I guess it was the same in Ireland. And they were considered, I think it was considered a bigger prize to be had to have a daughter, a nun, than a son, a priest.
Tom, are there any parts of the book that were particularly challenging for you to write or put on paper?
There were, particularly the towards the end of the book, where I'm coming to terms with it from my father's death. That was very difficult, and people have told me when they get to that part of the book, they cry. Well, I cry too when I was writing it. Also, writing the book and thinking so much about my father, I guess I'm like many, many children, that I'm sorry I didn't have an adult relationship with my father. He was always the father, I was always the child, in a way, but it was never felt that we were adult to adult.
And that's something you just can't reconstruct when he was gone. I know it's not out that long, Tom, but what has the general reception been like to the book, either in Ireland or here? You know, do people, I imagine people, in particular people who grow up in Ireland in this period, will identify with a lot of what you write in terms of growing up on an Irish farm in the middle decades of the 20th century.
Oh, yes. There has been a very good response from people who had the same experience that I had, or something similar. I've even had a few emails from people who live in Canada, who were brought up in farms in Canada, who would have had similar experience. One of the things in the book is the isolation we lived in as children. And when you live on a farm, you become part of the family enterprise. The farming is the family enterprises, and everybody has their work cut out for them. So to a certain extent, like us coming home from school because we had to do our chores, we were cut off from a lot of socialization with other children. And we lived on a lane with no exit, and it was mucky lane with potholes in it. So that lane itself was like a moat around a castle. You know, people didn't, it wasn't a very nice looking place to take a walk in. So we had very few visitors. And I would imagine that my experience, that experience of living lonely out in a farm, was common to anybody who was brought up on a farm. I remember reading a biography of Harry Truman some years ago, and he had the same thing of being out in the fields all by himself, driving horses and that were pulling agricultural implements. And he felt that terrible loneliness, that isolation from everybody else. Where was I going with this? What did you ask?
About people identifying with the experience of growing up on a farm in Ireland in that period. I think a lot of the themes that you explore will be very familiar to people.
Oh, yes, to many people. The book has been published in England, and it's being distributed in Ireland by the English part of Simon & Schuster, and we haven't got much results except what you can see on Amazon about sales or anything. But it is receiving more publicity now in Ireland. And hopefully, a lot of people will identify with the book and enjoy.
Tom, how long, obviously a memoir is kind of a work in progress from birth, but how long would you say it took for you to kind of really put it on paper and come to this part of the process where it's out and you're promoting it? You know, is it a couple of years or longer?
Oh, it was longer. I started writing it about 6 or 7 years ago. And at some point, I wasn't convinced that I was able to write a memoir. And I had read something by, I think it was some French guy, I think it was Rousseau, said that in a memoir, you're not really writing a memoir unless you tell the truth. If you don't tell the truth about everything, you're telling lies. So that was a difficult thing to tell the truth. But at the same time, I wasn't able to do what Rousseau demanded, that you tell everything. Of course, you cannot tell everything, but some things I did hold back on. But anyhow, I was writing the book about 7 years ago, and I gave up on it. And I wrote another book in the meantime. And while I was working on this other one, Pat, my wife, who does all the business side of the books, which I'm very fortunate that she does, she sent some of the stuff I had written to the Irish Echo. And Peter McDermott there is in charge of that side of the paper. And Peter, published several of the things and chapters, the short chapters, and we got such good feedback from people when we go to some events that Pat began to push me towards finishing it and getting it out there. And actually Simon & Schuster bought it on about a third of what I had written. So with Simon & Schuster interested in it, of course I got back to it. And
the rest of history. Yeah, that's great. Well, listen, Tom, thanks for taking some time to chat to me today. As I say, it's a real personal pleasure to know that you've put this pen to paper with it, and the semester is wrapping up here, and I have to say I'm really looking forward to delving into it. As you know, Tom, my mother's is a Laois woman, so she's not too far off your age. So even though she grew up in a town, I'm really looking forward to delving into it and reading about a Laois childhood as such, outside of also then the wider themes, of course, that frame it and I suppose make it unusual in terms of your lens on how you're kind of reflecting back on the culmination of you entering the priesthood and whatever. So again, the title is We Were Rich and We Didn't Know It, A Memoir of My Irish Boyhood. It's by Tom Phelan, that's Phelan, and Phelan, I suppose, is how it's pronounced in Laois. Tom, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's available now, and of course, if you want to find out some more information about Tom and his writing, his website is www.tomphelan.net. You've written, I believe, 6 novels prior, Tom, is that right? Would you go back to the novel, or are you taking a break now for a while?
I'm finishing up a novel, yeah.
Okay, oh, wonderful. So something more to look forward to. Thanks so much, Tom. Great to talk to you here on This Irish American Life, and happy writing with the next novel.